Welcome to Shoot Like a Girl, a podcast featuring interviews with extraordinary military women from around the world who push their limits on and off duty. I'm your host, Kate Stewart, and this is episode number 23. Today's guest is Major Leslie Quinlan. In addition to being an officer in the Canadian Armed Forces, Leslie is also an accomplished triathlete. In 2019, she was named the Canadian Armed Forces Female Athlete of the Year. She's represented the Canadian Forces on the international stage, winning medals at home and abroad. Leslie is also the director of the Canada Army Run. This year, the Army Run will take place virtually and in person. The in-person event is Sunday, September 18th in Ottawa, Canada. The race is also a fundraiser for Support Our Troops and Soldier On.
Ready? Ready? Nice and steady. Light!
I'm a steamroller, baby.
I'm a steamroller, baby.
Just a rolling down the line.
Just a rolling down the line.
I'm a steamroller, baby.
I'm a steamroller, baby.
Just a rolling down the line.
Just a rolling down the line.
So you better get out of my way now.
So you better get out of my way now.
Before I roll all over you.
Before I roll all over you.
Perfect. Okay, Leslie, welcome to the podcast. I'm so happy to have you here tonight. We had a little scheduling difficulties, but here we are now.
That's awesome. No, thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Let's start by talking about you. Where did you grow up?
I'm really from the burbs of Vancouver. I grew up in Maple Ridge, BC.
So what was your childhood like?
Yeah, I grew up really loving the water. My dad was a diver for a bunch of years. And so, you know, swimming was not really an option. The joke was you got tossed in the water as a baby. And if you could swim, you could stay. So I did all the swim levels and that sort of thing. I experimented briefly with synchronized swimming, but there wasn't a club where I lived. So it wasn't very exciting. I wasn't old enough to do lifeguarding stuff yet. So my mom tossed me in competitive swim club. And so I did that in the summers for some years. And then I did the lifeguarding bit for a while. Oh, and I did a little bit of like cross-country running in sort of junior high-ish age. But when I went to university, I didn't do sports at school, although I did experiment briefly with underwater hockey, which I found to be surprisingly violent and a really good lung workout. And later, 2002, I got involved in military pentathlon. So I did that for 5 summers with some army training in between. And I didn't take up triathlon till a bit later. So that's kind of the sports story in a nutshell.
Yeah, the underwater hockey is funny because not really too many people know about it, but I worked at a dive shop for years and some of those guys would come in to buy masks and snorkels. And yeah, it does seem like a pretty tough activity.
They give you basically like a gardening glove so you don't scrape your knuckles along the tile at the bottom. And I think one time I forgot to put it on at first and I learned the lesson the hard way. It was enlightening.
And so did you have any family members in the military?
No. Apparently my grandfather, because my dad's side is from the Netherlands, worked as a civilian for the military there back during the war. My mom has a cousin, I believe, who's an Air Force Master 1 officer, but really no.
Okay, so with no, I guess, knowledge or influence, what made you want to get involved with the military?
Yeah, so I think like lots of people, I was involved with cadets as a teenager. I kept my friends more so probably there than at school when I was in high school. And so I was really involved with the Air Cadet program. Yeah, no, I didn't want to become one of those people who aged out and immediately came back to the program like some kind of warrant officer third class or something. So I took a bit of a break from cadets. And then I was talked into going back and working with a unit. So I did that for a while. And then I just decided that I needed a bit of a change. And actually, a friend's girlfriend was involved with the local field ambulance, said, hey, we need people over here. And although generally speaking, they want people who are HCAs to have degrees in healthcare administration or like business admin, something along those lines. I do not. My degree is in cell biology and genetics, but it was deemed close enough, and so I signed up with them, and I was with 12 Field Am for about 7 years or so, and then my husband joined the regular, transferred to the regular force, and we started getting moved around. So we've lived in a few different cities and have landed here in Ottawa 6 years ago.
Okay, and then so for those listening who don't know all the acronyms, HCA is.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Healthcare administrator.
Okay, and
Yes.
what's the main role of a healthcare administrator?
It's one of the few trades that's still sort of different between the regular force and the reserves. So, in very, very simple terms, in the reserves, it's largely organize medics, run medical units, climb the ranks in that sense. I held jobs in anything from recruiting to platoon commander, adjutant at the unit, ops and training officer, those sorts of roles. And in the regular force, it's still much more geared towards learning how to run a medical clinic. And some of those same roles still apply. Obviously, those are still going to be largely the people who are platoon commanders at field units and will again be geared towards those leadership roles in units. But the training offered is still a little bit different.
I feel like that's one of those jobs that I see on the recruiting website and that I read about, but I have never really met anyone who actually does that role.
I hadn't really either before I encountered it there, to be honest.
And being an air cadet, did you ever have any dreams of becoming a pilot?
I'd be lying if I said I didn't, but my vision was terrible, and I had some pretty serious Coke bottle glasses. I did not have naturally perfect vision, so that was never going to happen. They eventually, I believe, changed the rules such that it was okay to have laser eye surgery, but by the time that happened, wasn't something that was on my to-do list anymore. I was able to get a private license out of being an air cadet, which was super awesome. I had some great opportunities to fly there, and it was a lot of fun, but not professionally, no.
Yeah, that's still really awesome, though, doing your private pilot license.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's been a long time. I since have acquired different hobbies that suck up all my time and money, but I really did enjoy that.
I always kind of like to think that maybe someday I'll do that, but again, I also have many other hobbies that suck up all of my time and money.
Ah, the two things it would be nice to have a lot more of, right?
And so, how did you go from being involved in a few activities during high school and college to then being involved in military pentathlon and CISM triathlon and all of these elite sports?
My involvement in the military pentathlon was really because my husband saw a post somewhere and said, "Hey, this seems like something that would appeal to you." And a friend of his had done it a number of years prior, so he told me about it, and I thought, "Well, sure, why not?" So it was certainly very, very different. That one's teams of three, a competition that runs over 3 days. It's in a different NATO or Partnership for Peace country every year, and it's, like I said, 3 different days. And so the first day you do rifle and pistol shoot. To keep it interesting, you use weapons of the host country. Day two is obstacle courses, so each a land and water obstacle course. And on the third day, you do an orienteering course where they switch out your map every few points. So you have to do all kinds of different maps. So yeah, that was really interesting. And I had actually always really wanted to do modern pentathlon. So I flip-flopped a little between that and triathlon when I first started doing it because I really, really wanted to be serious about modern pentathlon. But speaking of time and money, I just got into a vicious circle where it turned out I wasn't rich enough to be as serious enough or as serious as I wanted to be about it. So I eventually figured out that the military had a triathlon team and went, "Oh, well, I think the goal should be to try and get on to that team." So I very fortuitously met somebody who was on the team when I was working on Op-Podium, which was the military security contribution to the 2010 Olympics. And she said, "Oh, well, this is how you get involved." And we did some workouts together, and I was able to get to CAF Tri-Nationals after that. And well, then the rest kind of became history.
So for someone like me who is completely clueless about pentathlon, what's the difference between military pentathlon and modern pentathlon?
Yeah, so I told you about the military pentathlon, whereas modern pentathlon is five events all one day, individual sports, or the other one was teams of three. And it's fence, swim, ride horse, it's a show jumping event, shooting, and running. Since I did it, they've changed the format a little bit. So the shoot and the run is combined. They made it a little bit more spectator friendly. It is actually one of the only events, here's your trivia for the day, that's been in all of the modern Summer Olympics. I believe it started as an event that was meant to include skills that military officers should be good at, so hence the riding and the shooting, running, swimming, and fencing.
Right, yeah, I was going to say they're each sort of obscure in their own sense because I mean, I guess you could be the fastest runner, but then maybe you've never ridden a horse or, most people would probably have no clue how to get involved in fencing. I mean, they're both neat. The military pentathlon sounds very cool as well.
Oh, if there was something I wish Canada had a CISM team for, it would have been that. But yeah, so it was my excuse to finally take jumping lessons because that was the thing I always wanted to do as a kid, but we didn't have the means for that. So I was never going to get riding lessons. But yeah, it was awesome. And then I had to learn how to fence. So that was a different kind of adventure. And oh, sadly, there is fencing kid in my basement, very lonely these days, but my bike is less lonely, so there's that.
Right. And so with the triathlon, did you find yourself naturally gifted at that to start off?
No. I'd be lying if I said I did. I knew that I needed to be able to be, at least moderately fast at Olympic distance. And so I started out doing just sprint distance, which would be half the distance of each. And figured out that the swim was okay. I suffered badly on the bike, and then I got through the run. And so I remember early on thinking, okay, I have to take my current best time at a sprint distance, double the distance, make the time no more than double, and then I can get in the door. So, I mean, I think about that now as, I mean, I guess it was a long time ago, really, but yeah, it seemed very daunting at the time. So I certainly had to put a lot of work into, especially the bike, but it was worth it.
Talking about putting that work in, did you train with a club on a base or did you have someone to coach you one-on-one?
Kind of neither. So when I first started triathlon, we lived in Vancouver, and I did train a bit with the club at UBC. I wasn't a student there anymore, but I was able to as an alumni, I was able to train with the club there a little bit. They were still pretty new at the time, but it gave me a good group to swim with, and we did some rides together. But I've kind of always done a lot of my training largely on my own. I used to say that I would beast myself all year so that once I got onto the CISM team, I could have the week away for winter training camp, which was always a pretty, glorious escape from winter for a week in February. But I think that now I'm probably a lot more even at all three of them. I feel like I still suffer the most on the bike, but at least in the CISM format, the bike is draft legal. So you can find friends and work with teammates or sometimes even people from other countries. You work with whoever's around you, and that makes a lot more fun too.
Right. It's so interesting. During COVID, I got into watching all these different people on YouTube. And although I don't do triathlon, I really got into watching Lionel Sanders' videos. And it's so interesting to sort of follow his training and his competitions. And for him, the weak part is sort of the swim and watching that journey for him and trying to get faster at that one part, whereas he usually has to catch people on the run and the bike.
For sure. And I think especially in those really long distance races, you can get away a little bit more with being weaker in the swim because the other two are so long and you have a lot of time to catch up. I guess I should go back and finish answering the other part of the question because I did eventually decide that I wasn't entirely able to run my own triathlon life as effectively as I wanted to. So I did hire a private coach. And I thought, well, you know what? If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it properly. So I spent some years working with Sharon Donnelly, who is a former Olympian and former CAF and CISM member, who's just an overall awesome person. So I will toot her praises, shout her praises a little bit. And that certainly helped me a lot because I really needed that accountability. And it was almost like having someone to blame when you have a really hard workout and you're thinking to yourself, oh, I really don't want to do this. Oh, but coach says I have to. Okay, I'll do it because coach said I have to. And it made it all, you know, makes it a little bit more tolerable. And then you don't have to think so much about what your day's training is going to be. You open it up, you look at it, you do what you're told, and it gives you that ability to just, you know, be a simple athlete and follow direction.
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of taking just that decision-making away from you. And it's like, okay, this is my plan. I've got this run to do today and that run to do today. And the coach is tracking my progress and dealing with that. And all I have to do is to do the workouts.
Right. I'm just here to do what I'm told. You know, somebody else put the pain on the plate and I will just do my best to, you know, to get through it.
And so how many hours a week would you train for that?
Well, confession, this week, not very many because we're just starting back to training and I'm, well, I told you before, I'm on prisoner's rights at my home because I got COVID last week. So I guess in week, you know, in leading up to bigger competitions, let's see. I mean, more than 10, but I'm not like a 20 hours a week kind of person because, well, I wish I had that many hours to train.
And how do you balance that and work at the same time?
Oh, ever so carefully. I guess the thing is, you know, you really have to it's all about priorities, right? You have to, like, I treat the training like part of my job. So I just have a longer work schedule, I guess. I mean, one of the nice things about working full-time for the military, like I am on a Class B contract with my current job. That there is some PT time built into your day. So even though in practice, I don't always get to take that workout hour, I can sometimes do things like add it, you know, mush it into my lunch hour. So maybe I used to take an hour and a half for lunch, and then that would give me just enough time to have 15 minutes to get, you know, ready and showered at the front and back end and put in a solid hour of work in between. So I could at least count on that. And then I swim at an obscene hour of the morning. I am not by nature a morning person. So I just get up and do it. And unfortunately, swimming in Ottawa is really expensive. So I cross that with my genetically cheap nature. And once I've paid for it, then I tell myself I absolutely have to go. So those sort of things help. With the women on the CISM team, we, especially during the winter time, we try and have a bike ride together virtually on the weekends through Zwift. So I think that kind of helps us all stay in touch and stay motivated and, you know, have it as a little bit of social time too, because we're also terribly spread out.
So you've sort of touched on a few things, like the having a coach to keep you accountable to do your workouts and, you know, the mind thing about having paid for the swimming, so then you have to go. But when I started this podcast, I really wanted to speak to people like you who are these high performers and just get into that mindset of, you know, you say you're not a morning person, yet you get up and you go do this training. So what sort of things get you out of bed to do that? Like, what do you tell yourself on those days where you're in Ottawa, so maybe it's minus 30 and you're warm in your bed and you don't want to get up and go work out?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's answering that question for yourself of why am I doing this? What is the goal? And really trying to keep that in mind. So, the last World Military Games that we went to, you know, I really wanted to perform really well there. We had a team goal of coming home with hardware, particularly in the mixed masters category. And I knew that was going to require, you know, a really solid performance on my end, because whoever made up the rules on how that is calculated had a really strong woman on their team. You get two men and one woman whose times count. So it's man A plus man B plus woman A, plus woman A again. And that's the time for, in theory, four people, but really three people. So there was no possibility of that happening without a good performance. So I was also motivated by wanting to do a good job for, you know, for them. And, you know, it was going to be my chance. And I thought, okay, well, don't blow your chance. Or if you've seen Hamilton recently, don't throw away your shot. And I set my alarm fairly obnoxiously, and so when it goes off at 20 after 5 and it wakes my husband up, he would get after me for a while. After a while, I'm quite sure, if I were to continually set my alarm and then not get up. So I think I've always suffered a little bit from, like, if I've especially, like you say, if I've paid for a practice and I'm supposed to be there, if I don't go, I feel super guilty afterwards. Because I have done that, on very rare occasion. And then I feel super guilty about not doing it. And I think, oh, I've been awake half this time anyways. Why didn't I just get up and go? It wouldn't have been that hard. And swimming in particular, first thing in the morning, it's so hard to get into a cold pool. I'm not friends with cold water, but I will admit that, going for a swim definitely makes me feel better about life and is certainly a, mental health improvement technique for me.
Yeah, I can empathize with that as well. I mean, I'm currently living in Victoria, so I don't really have to deal with winter, but I can just, imagine those cold winters from when I lived in Toronto and Halifax, and just the last thing you want to do in the morning is to leave your house, and then even worse than that, to go jump into a cold pool.
It's totally true. And on the bright side, no one cares what you wear to the pool in the morning. So I will, roll out of bed, put on my swimsuit, put on, a pair of leggings or something, and literally put my snowsuit on over top. And if I'm really cold, I won't even take my snow pants off till I get on deck. And I just don't care. It doesn't matter. Nobody cares. Because, if you start out too cold, then it takes you all the longer to warm up. And I don't know. Oh gosh, I don't know what's the matter with Ontario, but there don't seem to be hot tubs at pools in this province. I don't understand why this would have been, like, this is sacrilege for BC, right? So you can't even, get out of the, get out of the pool and jump in the hot tub for 5 minutes to feel better about your life after a tough workout. You just have to go to the shower and hope that it's going to be warm that day. So, stay as warm as you can, as long as you can. Turn on that heated seat, crank up the heat in the car, be overheated when you get out of the car for that 30-second run to the door, whatever it takes. It's all okay.
Another athlete that I've been following a lot recently is Courtney DeWalter. So she's an ultra runner. And I mean, I think one of the best athletes that most people have probably never heard of because it's such a sort of niche sport. But she always talks about, going into the pain cave when she's running. And,
Yes.
do you sort of relate to that? And if so, how do you push through those painful moments? Or if there's a time in a race that you might need to speed up to pass someone, what do you tell yourself during those moments?
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. I you know what? I'm in awe of the really long ultra runners. I don't think I could ever do it. So really, hats off and kudos to them. But yeah, I think we all have those moments, especially in races where you're trying hard and it's, maybe it's not your day, but you just have to really dig deep and try and find that extra level of motivation. What do you tell yourself? Yeah. You remind yourself why you're there. You keep telling yourself what the goal is. I have a daughter who's now 11, and I remember the first race that I did after she was born. She was still very small. I think she was 3 months old, and it was the first time that I had run a continuous 10K was in that race. I'd been trying to work up to it, but no joke, running was the hardest thing to get back to. So I remember, I remember running along the trail in during the race, and I really wanted to just stop and take a break. And I remember saying to myself, okay, look, I know you're tired, I know this is hard, but if the only reason you want to stop and walk is because it's hard, not because you're actually hurt or injured, then that's not good enough. You need to keep going. Because at that point, I was still really trying to earn my spot on the team. And I kept telling myself, okay, you want a spot on this team. You want to be able to, go play with the big kids. You're going to have to suck it up and run like one of the big kids. So you cannot stop. You cannot take a break. You just have to keep going. And I've certainly used that a few times. Some of my favorite people at any race are the really enthusiastic spectators. And they, you know, those are the people that you don't want to let them down by slowing down in front of them. You don't want to just stop and have a big kind of moment because, you know, you feel like you're letting them down. So I, you know, I'm super appreciative to all of those people who come out and really enthusiastically cheer during races because they certainly help keep me going.
Awesome. And so you had a very successful year in 2019, which included competing at the CISM World Military Games in China. So what was that experience like for you?
It was really awesome. At first, ironically now, when we all found out that it was in China, everyone just immediately assumed that it was going to be in or near Beijing. And then we found out it was in a place called Wuhan, and we all had to look up where that was because in 2019 we didn't know yet. But it was an amazing experience. The World Military Games are one of the largest sporting events in the world. I think China had the better part of 10,000 athletes, coaches, et cetera, involved. And they put on an amazing show for the opening ceremonies. I was very fortunate to have been asked to be the flag bearer for the opening ceremonies, and Canada got, I guess just by luck of draw, where we happened to be standing was sort of front and center when we all lined up in the middle of the big stadium. So the whole thing was, you know, that was really cool, and they put on an amazing show. The competition itself was on for 2 weeks, and the good and bad about triathlon is that we were the very last day. So we had our whole first week was still training. The swimmers, for example, were quite fortunate to, I mean, they didn't have as much time change acclimatization, but they competed pretty early on. So they got to have their second week much more relaxed than we did. So we were a little bit envious of them. But yeah, we trained for the first week. And then we got to do a bit of taper and enjoy the food. We, like I said, competed the very last day, and the weather was a little bit questionable because it was raining in the morning. I believe it was still raining when the guys were racing, and we were very fortunate that it let up before the women got out on the bike. So we didn't have to deal with, rain running along the roads because that always makes it a little bit more dangerous around corners and dampens your day. Da-dum-dum-tsh. But the results were great. The men raced first, so like I said before, the way they figure out who wins in the mixed masters category is based on two men and one woman. So they were able to tell me what kind of lead they had. So I knew that there was a woman from the American team who was a very fast swimmer, and she was for sure going to be somebody that I was would be chasing. And so they told me that I had I think it was around 2.5 minutes, where as long as I wasn't more than that amount of time behind her, then we would be able to win gold for the mixed team masters. The swim was all right for me. The bike was going fine at first. Something got stuck in my brake and it was rubbing for a while. Spoiler alert, it turned out to be the helmet sticker of someone else, which was super frustrating. But I know, right? I couldn't figure out what it was. I was trying to get it out. I couldn't actually see it. Eventually, I managed to pull it out from behind with only a minor thwack to my finger. But two of my other teammates were able to catch up with me and were, you know, great help on the bike. The pack grew as we went along to about 10. We had a total mishap where unfortunately somebody crashed out of the pack really hard. She was okay, thankfully, but it blew up the pack and it slowed us all down a little bit. So we were not, even though we were in a much larger pack, we were not gaining time on the American I had my sights on. So when I got off the bike, I think at least I was like 5.5 minutes back from her, which was kind of a lot. So I knew that the only thing I could do was just run as fast as I possibly could. I knew I could make up time on her, but I didn't know if it was enough. And again, with the enthusiastic spectators, but this time it was a teammate who had, when I got back from the first lap, it was a 4-lap run, was yelling at me that I'd made up a minute and keep going. So that was super helpful and motivational. So I just kept trucking along, and I tried to speed up at one point. I started to feel a bit nauseous, and I was like, oh, okay, there's the limit. There's the red line. So I had to back off just a tiny little bit. But I don't know if there's a perfect race in triathlon, but that one was very, very good. And the result was very, very good. So I can't complain.
I mean, I sort of mentioned before that you had this big successful year, but have there been other times where you've had to deal with failure? And if so, how do you overcome that?
Oh, sure. You know, we all do. I crashed out of my very first draft legal race. That was certainly quite disappointing. You know, I called it a tough day at the office. And, you know, there's been a few times where I've certainly not performed as well as I would have liked to. You know, this year was kind of case in point. We raced really early, and nobody had done, you know, really any competing in the last couple of years. You know, all of the factors kind of stacked up against us. It took us a long time to get there and travel. There was a day and a half to acclimatize to the time zone change of 6 hours, and it was really, really hot, which we weren't used to coming from I guess kind of a cool spring out here, actually. And, you know, everybody had a tough day, and, you know, most of us blew up on the run, and it certainly wasn't the result that I was hoping for this year. But, you know, you just have to, you got to take it back to the drawing board. You're not going to have an amazing race every time. And, you know, you just have to remind yourself, you know, why you're there, and that we're really quite privileged to be able to do this at all. It's a far cry from being a professional athlete, but it's not that often that, you know, sort of the regular folks like us get to do the, or get to have that blue carpet professional race experience, right? So, you know, we're just really grateful that we can go and do it in the first place and represent the CAF and Canada and go, you know, go have these wonderful race experiences.
And so where was the one that you were saying this year? You said it was hot and you weren't acclimatized.
It was in the south of Spain, and it was in early June.
Oh, wow. Okay. I think I do remember seeing some posts from the CISM Facebook page about that.
I believe, yeah. I'm sure there would have been. And one of my teammates started us an Instagram page as well. So I know she posted some pictures and videos there. It was a lovely spot. The venue was great. Unfortunately, they started having a giant heat wave quite early. And even the people who were from around there said, yes, it's definitely warmer than it normally is. The race start times were very, very civilized. I think the women's race didn't even start until 11 a.m. However, because it was so hot, that meant that we were starting the run somewhere around, you know, 12:30. So it was heat of the day, and it was well over 30 degrees, and we just weren't quite ready for it. And I have to admit that my crummy winter training kind of reared its head a little bit, and it was just hard, you know, so it goes. We found out that next year's race is going to be in France, and shockingly early in May, we're told. So that's why we've all taken a bit of a break during the summer this year, and we're just starting back to training now.
Hopefully it will be a little more temperate conditions during that time.
Here's hoping. You know, you don't want it to be too cold, because, you know, then you freeze and that's not fun. And I'm just, like I said, not very good with the cold. I'm a self-admitted cold sissy to the extreme, but you don't want it to be too hot either. It's a lucky day when you have perfect race weather.
Yeah, I mean, although I do think the Canadians might have a bit of an advantage over some other countries if the weather was a bit colder. So all of this, you know, your athletic career within the forces so far sort of leads up to this point where it seems like you were a great fit to be the race director. So how did this opportunity present itself to you?
So I had found out that it was, you know, a job. I didn't actually know that. Probably, I guess, 4 or 5 years ago, I didn't even know that it was somebody's full-time job. And then I found out that, in fact, this is a thing. And I thought, okay, well, this would be, you know, really something to work towards. And then I found out that the job was going to be coming open. And I got together with the last race director. His name was Major Dave Tischhauser. Super nice guy. Props to him too. Great human. And was able to have coffee with him and ask some questions about, you know, how the job works. And, you know, he was kind enough to share some information with me. So I applied for the job when it came open, and due to a sort of fortuitous string of events, I wound up taking the job in January of 2020. And that lasted for about 3 months until we all got sent home for 3 weeks, and the job description changed very abruptly, but here we are.
Right. So I believe that there was the virtual race during COVID. Is that right?
Yeah. So, yeah, sorry. I feel like I left that hanging a little bit there, but we did change quite abruptly to virtual. And that's what we did for 2020 and for 21, because obviously we couldn't have an in-person event. And if I remember correctly, as soon as the Boston Marathon announced that they were changing their date from April to the fall, we thought, wow, do they know something that we don't know? Or, you know, is this going to wind up being a full cancellation? Of course, it obviously did wind up being a full cancellation. And we were fortunate to be able to take on the virtual realm. And last year in particular, it was very, very successful. We had a lot of people say that they were very thankful that we could put on a virtual event, because not everybody can travel all the way across the country for a road race for whatever reasons that they have. It's a long way. It's expensive. It takes a lot of time. So we've been able to offer it to really everyone instead of only those who are able to come directly to us. And we're pretty excited this year that we're able to offer it to people in both formats, because we've, as you know, are offering a hybrid model this year, where we have an in-person 5 and 10K in downtown Ottawa, and virtual for everyone else who either is unable or to come to Ottawa, or doesn't wish to be involved in crowds, or whatever their reasons may be.
Mm-hmm. And so for those listening, can anyone sign up, or do you need to be in the military?
Absolutely open to everyone. You can run or walk or roll with us. We have people who participate in the event in wheelchairs and hand cycles. And we really welcome everybody. We don't have prizes. We're not a competitive event in that sense. So we really welcome everybody from, you know, first time walker of a 5K to trying to get your very best time in a half marathon if you're doing it virtually, or that 10 in person with us this year.
And how many years has this race been going on for?
This is year number 15. It started in 2008, and it's really there to be the Canadian Army's biggest outreach event, as well as a really important opportunity and fundraising event for both Support Our Troops and Soldier On. So Support Our Troops is the official charitable cause of the Canadian Armed Forces. Support Our Troops is there to meet the unique needs and special challenges that are faced by members of the Canadian Armed Forces community as a result of their military service. So it includes providing financial assistance to promote family resilience, supports veterans and serving members who may have an illness or injury, and also does stuff like provide kids the opportunity to go to summer camp. Lots of really great programs. Also scholarships for kids from military families. And then Soldier On is there to contribute to the recovery of ill and injured CAF members and veterans. And so it does that by providing opportunities and resources through sports, through recreational and creative activities, and really improves the quality of life for those members. You know, they're really great organizations, and supporting them is really the most direct way to help members of the military community.
Yes, I was doing some browsing on the Army Run website, and I did see that you can make an individual page when you register to fundraise, so you can hit up your family and friends and get donations from them.
Yeah, so when you sign up for Army Run, which of course you can do at armyrun.ca, You can choose to make a one-time donation if you'd like to contribute a little bit more to support our troops. And we also are really encouraging people to take that one step further and create a fundraising page. And you can do that as an individual or create a team to do it as well. Again, it's really the most direct way to help people in those organizations. It's not an organization that has a lot of overhead because it's run through Canadian Forces Morale and Welfare Services. So, there's no CEO getting big bucks. There are a very small number of people who administrate and run these programs, and they are 300% devoted to making sure that everything goes to these organizations as much and directly as possible.
So this year as well, there's a new finish line at the National War Memorial.
We're pretty excited about that. Yes, we're going back downtown. So the start line will be across from City Hall, where it had been prior to 2019. But instead of the old route, we are going to have a brand new route. So the 5K and 10 both actually will start going through downtown. They will hit some of the great sites of Ottawa, including Parliament, Supreme Court, Art Gallery, and will both finish at the National War Memorial. The 10K is actually going to go out and go through the grounds at Rideau Hall as well, which is exciting because the half marathon used to do that. So if you were somebody who wasn't quite up to running that long, then you would miss out on that part of it. We have the band from the Governor General's Foot Guards that will be playing out there again as well. So it should be a really cool experience for everybody who joins us.
Yeah, it sounds like such an amazing race. I hope I get to do it some year. I mean, I would come this year, but I signed up for a 28K trail race, which happens to be the week before. So I have a feeling I'll be maybe using a walker for a couple of weeks after that.
Well, make sure you stretch and recover really well.
And so for everyone listening, the race is September 18th in Ottawa. And the website is armyrun.ca, so you can register online. And will there be registrations in person the day of?
So the really truthful answer is that we are ordering merchandise based on those people who are registered, and we will have, of course, a buffer for those who sign up late. But if we run out of merchandise, then we will have run out of spots. As long as we still have shirts, we will let you register right up to the day before. For virtual, you can absolutely register right up to the day of because we can certainly send it out to you after the fact.
Okay, and then are there any other details or facts that you would like to add or share about the Army Run?
I think what I'd like people to know again is that why we do it, and that it's for those who are able to join us in person. It's a really special experience. It's got a great, great community to it. It's there so that the public and the military can really both come together and interact and kind of thank each other, if you will. Largely the army is there to say, hi, here we are. Please, come check us out, see what we're all about. We do lots of great things. The public at the same time is able to come out and generally thank the men and women who do so much to protect Canada, both at home and abroad. We have some really special on-course features, including Remembrance Row, where those who are signed up to participate are able to nominate a fallen member from the forces, be that friends or family, to be featured on course. And that part of it is sponsored by the Legion. And so we have these very lovely placards, if you will, with those members' pictures that are printed out and put along the race course in a section that will be towards the finish line. There's the Soldier On wave that we send out 15 minutes in advance of the regular waves. Those people have some of them very visible injuries. You'll see people who, again, are in wheelchairs or maybe walking or with a prosthetic, sometimes service animals. It's a very emotional experience for just about everybody, them included. It's that opportunity for them to really feel included and be called out for being special and being the brave warriors that they are. So, lots of those sorts of things make it really special. We have a kid zone, which is put on by our presenting sponsor, BMO. We have a couple other great sponsors, GDMS and Decorah Village, that present our 5 and 10K respectively. But so we have stuff for everybody to do and keep the kids occupied while you're going to pick up your race kit at City Hall. So we really welcome everybody, and we want everybody to have a good time, to feel included, and, you know, get their dog tag finisher medals once they've completed their race, that we have military members on site to put around your neck or hand to you, perhaps in this case, but hopefully we will be able to be back to actually putting them on you.
And so as the race director, will you be sort of working behind the scenes, or do you get to go out and run that day?
I do not get to go out and run that day. We're too busy, unfortunately, but I will certainly be there and, you know, make sure that I'm around to cheer everybody on and be part of the presence and keep myself out of trouble.
I hope you have a great race, and I hope that more people go and sign up, and that everyone has an amazing time. I just have one more question for you that I ask all of my podcast guests. And that is, what advice would you give to women looking to join the military?
I think maybe a couple of things. The first would be advice that I would probably give to anybody who was looking to join the military, which would be, if it is, you know, something that interests you, then make sure that you do your homework and you know that the trade you have selected or are being offered is something that you really want to do. You know, there's obviously ups and downs to military life, whether you're doing it as a reservist or a Red Force member. And so it makes that a lot easier to take those downsides if you're doing something that you want to do. So I think much like relationships or anything in life, don't settle, right? If you want to be a pilot and you're offered infantry or the reverse and that doesn't appeal to you, then, you know, maybe reconsider. If you want to be a combat engineer and you are offered combat engineer and you think this is the coolest thing ever, I'm going to join the army and see the world, you may very well get the opportunity to do that, and you will get to do some things that are probably cooler than you thought they were going to be. I think I'll give credit to my husband for this one, because he has said before that, you know, there is a certain degree of, you know, day in, day out, just like any job. And there are days that you're going to do things that are very unfun and are not things that you want to do. And you're going to be cold and wet and miserable. But the things that you get to do that are cool in the Army are probably a lot cooler than most of the things you're going to get to do otherwise, if that makes sense. I think, you know, you have to look at it as an opportunity that, you know, that you're presented. I think life in general is a series of opportunities, and it's really up to you whether or not you want to take advantage of them. Some of them may come again, some of them may not. And yeah, some of it is being in the right place at the right time. But if you can manage that and you can make it all work for you, there are certainly some, you know, some good adventures and some good people that you will meet along the way. I have said that, you know, commonly, that many of my favorite people in the forces I have met through sports. And I have some very dear friends who have come my way through those avenues. And I'm certainly very thankful for those people.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's really great advice. And I know you're very busy. We have 1 month until the Army race. So thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I feel like I perhaps blathered your ear off for a long time, but I really appreciate the opportunity. And like I said, we certainly welcome everybody to join us for Army Run.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to help support this podcast, please subscribe and leave a rating and review on your Apple Podcast app.